If I were to ask you tonight, which I am asking you, where is your faith? I wonder how you would answer that question. Where is your faith? Some of you would no doubt reply that I'm trusting in Jesus Christ. My faith is in him alone. And there is no other secure place to put our faith and to trust in Jesus Christ. It might be that some of you here are not certain as to that you are trusting in Jesus Christ alone. It might be that some of you would answer it in that way, and yes, you are trusting in Christ, but actually, like most of us here probably, we actually do start to trust in other things, don't we? The homes that we have, the jobs that we have, the friends that we have, the church that we're part of. There's so many other things that we can start to put our confidence in. And, oh yes, we say I'm trusting in Christ. But actually, when it comes to it, maybe some of our faith is in some of these other things. This question of where is your faith is a question that Jesus asked his disciples, these men who had been following him for some time, asked by Jesus of these terrified disciples in this little 30-foot boat on a rough Sea of Galilee in the middle of a storm. Where is your faith? It's an easier question to answer when things are going well and we're feeling more secure. But it's one that becomes harder to answer when things do not go our way and difficulties and trials arise. Chapter 8, in which we find this account of Jesus calming this storm on this lake, this Sea of Galilee, is the beginning of a section where we see Jesus at work, and we see Jesus sending his disciples out teaching them lessons as to what it means to be a follower or a disciple of Jesus Christ. And there's lessons for the disciples here in this boat on this sea. I think as we look at this passage, the biggest lesson that we see is really answered shown by another question, which again is in verse 25, where the disciples in fear and amazement look at each other and say, Who is this, Jesus? He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him. Jesus doesn't pray. He doesn't stand up and pray that God would still the waters. He speaks, stands up, commands the waves to stop and the winds to quieten down. And it's one of many demonstrations of the things that Jesus does, the miracles that he does, that demonstrate that this Jesus is God himself. You see, the one who created the seas is the one who can calm the seas. The one who makes the winds is the one who commands the winds. So here's Jesus with his disciples, and he says to them one day, let's go over to the other side of the lake. And these disciples, these people who have been following Jesus, were beginning to understand who this Jesus is. But there was much more for them to learn. I suppose we could say they were fair weather disciples. They'd learnt to follow. They'd learnt to trust. They'd seen some of the things that he'd done. And they were doing that when things were going well. But what about when the going gets tough? What about when things aren't so secure? What about when those difficulties and those challenges come along? I want us to look at these disciples tonight and see what we can learn from the situation and see what we can learn from their faith as well. Firstly, this storm was a real storm, and the fear that they had was a natural response to that storm. A storm is a frightening thing, isn't it? Some of you may remember the hailstones that we had, was it last year sometime? And some of you here may have experienced some of those hailstones. My brother, he lives just north of Melton Mowbray, and they got the full force of those hailstones. He had windows broken, solar panels broken on the roof, and he said he has never been so terrified in his life. These were real fishermen facing a real storm, and they had real fear. It tells us in verse 23 that a squall came down on the lake. And the Sea of Galilee is the largest freshwater lake that there is, 13 by 8 miles, about 600 feet below sea levels, and there's hills around it. And what can happen is the wind can suddenly come down into it and funnel down these hills and come onto this lake, and can just suddenly change to being storm conditions there on the lake. And it tells us in verse 23 that their boat was swamped and they were in great danger. To be in trouble on the sea must be a frightening place. It's not something I've experienced, but it must be a frightening place to be in trouble on the sea. My daughter's studying over in Belfast at the moment, and when I went over to see her not long ago, we went to the Titanic museum exhibition, not sure what it's called, over there. And going round that, you see something of the terrible fright that came upon those people on that Titanic ship as it started to go down in the sea. But this boat the disciples are in, it wasn't anything like the Titanic, probably about 30 foot long, but it was in trouble. Real fishermen in a real boat, in a real storm, facing real fear. They were frightened. They were terrified. We don't read that they went to Jesus and said, excuse me, can you help us? We're in a spot of bother here. Can you do something about it? Nothing like that. We don't know really that whether they thought Jesus being there would make any difference to the situation or not. But they come to him and they wake him, verse 24. Master, Master, we're going to drown. Here we are drowning, and all you can do is sleep. The storm was real, and their fear was a natural response to that storm that we face. And tonight, if we're Christians, if we're following Jesus and trusting in him, we'll face storms, and we will experience fear. There's many different storms that might come our way in our lives, or comes the way of all of us, and particularly God's people. It might be the ferocious winds of hostility to the gospel. Again, when I was over in Belfast, the somebody studying at the college where my daughter is, from Romania, a Christian, and he speaks of his father having to face hard labour for many, many years in that land of Romania, simply for speaking about Jesus to others. The ferocious winds of his hostility, and others around the world tonight facing very difficult circumstances, those ferocious winds of hostility to the gospel, and we can face something of that in our land, can't we? And very often Christians are driven out of jobs now. It seems to be more common, doesn't it? It seems to be happening. This hostility towards Christians and this desire to silence Christians in our land. Or it might be the swelling sea of bereavement or illness or just getting older. We have one of our deacons at church, his wife had been ill for some time, and sadly she died just 2 weeks ago. My own father-in-law was ended up in hospital again just over a week ago, and was there for a few days, and he's back home. But just all part of getting old. Maybe you face that swelling sea of illness, getting old, bereavement. And maybe just feel tossed around by it, as it were, all at sea, a bit like those disciples in that boat. Or it can be the relentless battering, can't it, of uncertainty or difficulties. And many of us face those things. They're real things that we face, whether in our work or our lack of work, or in relationships, or in, it can be home life as well. Just the pressures of life, feeling battered by different things. Sometimes we see them coming, don't we? And we anticipate them. Maybe a fear of redundancy. I was a company I'm doing some work for. I was in there just 2 weeks ago, and somebody I was working with on that very day was called in to be told that he's facing redundancy. And another good friend of mine there, talking to him later, saying, next time it happens, and I expect it'll happen again, it'll probably be me. That fear of redundancy, or progressive illness, or future consequences, whatever it might be. Sometimes we do see them coming. Sometimes we don't see them coming, do they? And they suddenly come. A bit like these fishermen in the boat. 1 minute, calm seas. And they spent their life crisscrossing that Sea of Galilee. And there they were on an ordinary day. But in a moment, it's turned into a terrifying experience. And those situations happen, don't they? A young man in our church just diagnosed with cancer this week, just 18 years old. And we don't know what a phone call can bring, or a visit to the doctor, or a hospital appointment. But as well, every one of us faces that ultimate storm of death, don't we? And we have to be real about that. The storms we face are real, and the fears that we have are natural as well. And as Christians, if we're Christians here tonight, we're not exempt from those things. We face those things. It might be that we face more because we are Christians. That's certainly the case for many people in our world tonight who, because they are Christians, are suffering and persecuted, maybe in prison and locked up, driven out of jobs, in so many lands around our world. To be a Christian knows that it will bring with it persecution from others. Those storms of life which come. How are you faring in the storms that maybe you face or anticipate? How will you fare? One of the things that we can be confident of tonight, and one of the things that we can be certain of tonight, is that we can face them because there is one who has faced the storm of God's judgment and God's wrath and God's anger. Jesus himself, this one who is here in the boat with them. This is earlier on in his life, but he's eventually going to go to a cross, a cruel Roman cross, and face a cross and face judgment, not for his wrongdoing, but for our wrongdoing, as our sin was laid upon him. And because he has faced that judgment, because he has faced that storm, we can too. And it's a tremendous confidence, and it's a great hope to know that whatever storms might come our way, we can be confident because Christ has been through that storm of God's judgment. Whatever the storm might be, that we can know that Christ is with us, that his grace is sufficient, that he is the God of all comfort, and that he will never leave us nor forsake us. Here are these disciples in this boat. They've started to follow Jesus. They've seen him at work. They've seen some of the things that he's done. They're starting to understand who he is. But then this storm arises. What was their response to the storm in this situation? Well, their faith was weak, wasn't it? And they should have known better. Jesus stands up, he rebukes the storm, showing who he is, demonstrating who he is. Stop. And the storm is calmed. And then he asks them this question: where is your faith? Where is your faith? How would you answer that? It wasn't in their strength. Or it's not, it's not asking about the strength of their faith. It's not asking about the quality of their faith. He's asking about the object of their faith. Where is your faith? If you were in that boat and you were asked that question, where would your faith be? Would it be in a seafaring fisherman who knows those waters, fished on them for many, many years, knew what the weather conditions were like? Would your faith be in the fisherman? Or would your faith be in a carpenter who happened to be in a boat and probably didn't know much about fishing? This countryside carpenter. If you don't see Jesus for who he is, you'll get the wrong answer to that. Because your faith will be in those fishermen, because they know what they're doing, rather than this carpenter. But if you see this Jesus for who he is, the God incarnate, God become man, then you will get the right answer to that. And in this moment in time, for these disciples, their faith was not in him. Their fear wasn't wrong. It's a natural response to the situation they're in. But their faith was wrong, or their lack of faith, or their misplaced faith. And what I want us to do for a few minutes is to think about some of the possible reasons why they didn't trust Jesus in these moments here on the boat. And the reasons why it might be that they didn't trust him and their faith was misplaced might be some of the same reasons that our faith can be misplaced. Firstly, it might be that they'd forgotten what Jesus had done. These disciples have been with Jesus for some time now. And if you go back in Luke's Gospel and read through some of those early chapters, you will see some of the things that Jesus had done. In chapter 5, you find this miraculous catch of fish, this amazing moment when they're out on the sea, they'd fished all night, they caught nothing, and then this miraculous catch. They'd seen Jesus do that. They'd have been there when with Jesus as they were crammed into that room, and suddenly there was something happening on the roof, and the roof was pulled apart, and a man was lowered through the roof, and he was forgiven and healed. They would have seen that and seen what he was doing. And then they'd have been in Capernaum, not far away, when they saw the servant of the centurion healed. And then they would have been in Nain and seen this dead boy brought back to life. Now they're amazing things to experience and see. They'd seen this Jesus, the one who is God, at work. They'd seen some of the miracles that they'd done. But it seems in this moment that perhaps they'd forgotten what he had done. In fact, if you go back to the previous chapter, Jesus tells them they'd seen all this, and this message was given: go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. So they hadn't just seen those things that we've mentioned, they'd seen all those things as well. They'd experienced all of that. But yet in this moment, it seems that maybe they'd forgotten what Jesus has done. And we can be like that. We can take our eyes off him, and we can look at our circumstances, and we can, in that careless moment, forget what Jesus has done for us. He's laid down his life. He's gone to that cross to bring us salvation. He's saved us. He's forgiven us. He's taken our judgment. He's prepared that place for us in heaven. We forget the salvation that we know in our hearts. We forget the times that we've experienced not our strength, but His strength. We forget the provision that we've seen when we've come to the end of ourselves and we're just not sure how things are going to go forward from here, and we've seen God's provision. We forget the peace that we've experienced in our hearts at times. If we're trusting in Christ, if we belong to Him, He brings that peace which passes all understanding, a peace that we can't explain, but a peace that we can experience and enjoy. And we've experienced these things, but yet we can forget what Jesus has done for us, and that can be the cause of our faith becoming misplaced. Maybe they'd forgotten what Jesus had said as well. In verse 23 he says, let's go over to the other side of the lake. If Jesus is the one who is God and He is the one who has said this, can anything stop Him from getting to the other side of the lake? These disciples cried out, don't you care? We're perishing. Forgetting what God has said. His word is true. He does what He says. He doesn't guarantee a pleasant journey on the way, but He does promise a safe arrival on the other side and does promise that He is with us. And that's true for us in our lives, isn't it? Jesus says, I am with you always. I will never leave you or forsake you. It doesn't always mean things will be easy. It doesn't mean that we don't have to face those storms of life. But it does mean that we can be confident that He is with us in them. Another time he says, Paul writing about this in 2 Corinthians, he says, my grace is sufficient for you. And that's a wonderful thing, to know the sufficiency of God's grace. But again, it doesn't mean that we won't experience those storms, but it does mean that we'll know the sufficiency of His grace in those situations that arise. And if we're to know His strength, we have to experience our weakness first, don't we? We have to experience our weakness. One of the things that I always enjoyed doing on our young people's camps is abseiling, leaping off a viaduct 100 foot below, just hanging on a rope basically, or something like that. And there's that moment where you stand at the top and you have to lean back and you're hanging on tight and you're tense and just hanging on to everything with all your strength. But that's the moment where you have to lean back and trust in the rope that you're hanging on to. And it's that a sort of leap of faith moment, as it were. But that moment when you go from your own strength to the strength of that rope. And I think it's a little bit like that with God's strength. We have to experience our weakness before we can fully experience and understand His strength. Again, in 2 Corinthians 12, Paul says, speaking of God's power or the power of Christ, that my power is made perfect in your weakness. And that can hurt, doesn't it? We don't want that weakness. We want to think that we can do it, that we are strong enough, that it's down to us, and it's because of how good we are and what we have done and what we have achieved. But it says, my power is made perfect in your weakness. And it's through our weakness and through those storms and through those difficulties that we experience the power of God and the grace of God and the peace of God. Maybe these disciples have forgotten what Jesus had said. Let's go over to the other side. His word is true. He does what He says. And when God's word says that my power is made perfect in your weakness, it's true, and He might have to wake us weak for us to experience that. But let me suggest another reason that maybe why the faith of disciples was so weak at this time. Maybe they thought that because Jesus was asleep, that He didn't care. In Mark's Gospel, the same account of the storm, they wake him up and it says, "Don't you care if we drown?" This sense that he doesn't care. Don't quite know what they were thinking when they awoke him, when they actually thought he could do anything about it. But he said, "Look, don't you care? You know, we're following you. Don't you care about us?" Maybe they thought that, well, if he's asleep, there's nothing he can do about it. Don't you care? And it can seem like that for us at times, that God doesn't care. Does God care about persecuted Christians in Syria or Mali? Does he care when we go through bereavement or redundancy or just difficult times? Does he care here in the UK as marriage has been redefined, as people try to silence us? Does God care? It can seem at times, can't it, that we can find ourselves asking, does he really care? But maybe the disciples were, maybe it's a bit more than that, not that he didn't care, but maybe they just thought that the situation was beyond his control. Think about what had happened before. He'd healed a leper, he'd made the blind to see, made the deaf to hear, raised the dead. Yes, okay, that's fair enough, but this situation is just one situation too far. And we can become like that, can't we? Thinking that our circumstances are beyond his control. Thinking that there's no way out. Thinking that it's just too bad. Thinking that our situation somehow is just different. Thinking that God doesn't care. Or thinking that a situation is beyond his control. But you know, as we look into this account, and as we look elsewhere in the scriptures as well, we see and we know that Jesus did care. He was teaching them lessons that they didn't know they needed to learn, and their reaction showed, didn't it, that they hadn't learnt these lessons yet, in the way they said, "Look, don't you care?" But Jesus did care. He did take them safely over to the other side, and they did learn. I think it's interesting that Peter, one of these fishermen, one of these people who had seen all these things had happened, he writes a book later on, doesn't he, when he's older, the books of 1 and 2 Peter in the scriptures. And what does he write about? He writes to God's people. He writes to Christians facing storms, facing trials, facing persecution. And what does he say to them? Don't you know that God cares for you? Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. I find that so encouraging, that Peter, here he was, one of the disciples, don't you care? But then years later, writing those words, which have been such an encouragement to me, that we can cast all our anxiety upon him because we know he cares. He cared for them in the boat. He cares when Peter wrote to those scattered Christians facing all sorts of trials of life and persecution, and he still cares today, and he will care tomorrow. This is the God who can do all things. This is the Jesus who stands up and says, "Stop!" And the storm stops, rebuking the wind. That moment when everything just comes to a halt. Even the winds and the waves obey him. That was true then, and that's true now. It was true for the disciples, and it's true for us today. And what we see as we look at these disciples, yes, their faith was weak. And maybe there were reasons why they didn't trust God. But we have good reason, don't we, today, to trust God. Good reasons that whatever we might be experienced, that he works all things for his good. Look at what he's done. The cross demonstrates, doesn't it, that his great love for us, in that Christ died for us. Look at what he's done. Listen to what he says. He says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in your weakness." Remind yourselves that he always cares, that you can cast your anxiety upon him, and all your anxiety upon him, and know that he can do all things. This is the God that became a man. This is the Jesus who is with the disciples in that little boat, in that small lake, big lake, with those fearful disciples. And it's the same God who is with us today, just as we face the difficulties and trials of life.